We've all heard of flyover country, that big stretch of America that separates the East Coast from the West Coast. In 2020, some of the nation's biggest headlines have come from this usually quiet region. George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Jacob Blake, armed militia at the Michigan State House, a foiled kidnapping plot of the Michigan governor. But as important as these stories are, coverage of how the coronavirus pandemic has affected the Midwest has been scarce. Hi, I'm Sarah Cooper. Welcome to COVID Between the Coasts. With research and data resources from the University of Evansville, bilingual reporters from CAPASA Midwest, and public media storytellers spread across seven Midwestern states, we are bringing you stories of how COVID-19 has impacted the lives and livelihoods of Midwesterners. These are the people we cover every day, and these are the pandemic stories you won't hear anywhere else. Thank you for listening. In episode 3, journalists Judith Ruiz Branch and Carly Goldenberg, contributors to WNIN's bilingual podcast, CAPASA Midwest, bring us stories of essential workers in Chicago during the pandemic.
And I just got this aha moment, which happens a lot. And then I texted Carly and I was like, Carly, oh my gosh, the people in the mural are essential workers. Why don't we just interview them? Because I don't see anything about their stories in any publications. So do you remember when I texted you that?
I do remember. And I remember too, like, it felt like such a perfect fit because we'd had so many conversations really trying to zero in on, okay, we know we want to talk to the most affected people and we know that that's essential workers. And we know that, you know, in general, there's been some coverage, but it usually just stops at essential workers are the most affected by COVID-19. But we really wanted to not just cover something and leave, but to stay with people. And then the idea came, well, what if we do sort of like a day in the life and lived experience? Like, what if we have people walk us through their days and what if we meet people where they are? And I think that the mural worked out so beautifully because, like Judith said, I think too often because of time constraints or other constraints, the story is the mural itself, but it's a lot less frequently that you actually get someone who sees the mural and does the work to find the people in the mural and hear their actual stories. And I think that is what makes the story so special.
It's a windy day in Chicago. The sun shines down on a large mural that sits at Carpenter and 18th Street in Pilsen, a neighborhood on Chicago's southwest side. It's hard to miss and attracts everyone who passes by to stop and take note of the colorful homage that spotlights three of the community's very own. A community which has had to overcome hardship long before the COVID-19 pandemic hit. A community whose hope has proven to be as essential as its workers. An indigenous serape pattern serves as the colorful backsplash for Javier, a U.S. postal worker, Rosalinda, a clerk at Los Jasmines, the corner store where the mural is located, and Juan, a butcher shop worker, all pictured in their work uniforms and masks. The pattern is intentional and pays respect to the culture and history each proudly carries. Their piercing eyes embody the definition of strength. Strength in spirit and strength in community. Sprawled across the top in white bold letters reads Pilsen, the text bursting off the colorful wall. El corazón de Chicago, the heart of Chicago, is etched in black underneath the portraits, serving as almost a platform to finally recognize their essential labor. In the upper right-hand corner is a short sentence painted in blue from the artist that is both a dedication and a rallying cry during the pandemic. Dedicado a los trabajadores esenciales de nuestra comunidad. Dedicated to the essential workers of our community. Amor y respeto. Love and respect. September 2020. It's not uncommon to see a mural like this in Pilsen. The historic neighborhood is known for its culture and art, La fortaleza, the fortitude of the community, remains thick in the air. Yet it is uncommon to see workers like Javier, Rosalinda, and Juan pictured, and even more uncommon to know their stories. Because to know the stories of the community, you'd have to pay closer attention than what's historically been given. So these are the stories of three Latinos brought out of the shadows by a mural in Pilsen. Rosalinda is a cashier at her brother's corner store, Los Jasmines, in Pilsen. She says the store is open every day of the week.
Todos los días está abierto, de lunes a domingo, de 8 a 9 de la noche.
And she works every day.
Todos los días. No todas las horas, pero todos los días. De 8 a, normalmente de 8 a 5 de la tarde.
8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Sunday. I talked to her at the store on a Saturday afternoon as she worked behind the counter through masks and a plexiglass partition.
Ese es mi día, llegar, desinfectar, limpiar la tienda, empezar a ver qué se necesita para hacer una orden de las cosas.
She says a normal day for her consists of cleaning and disinfecting the store in the morning, completing inventory orders, and tending to customers.
Termino de trabajar, llegar a mi casa, hacer de comer, limpiar mi casa, atender mi esposo. Y para esto ya son las 8 o 9 de la noche. Entonces ya si me queda tiempo ver una película o hacer algo de actividades ahí en mi casa y ya.
When she's done at 5, she travels about 15 minutes to get home, cooks dinner for her and her husband, cleans her house and tends to things at home, and by that time, it's 8 or 9 at night. If there's time, maybe she watches a movie or goes to the gym.
Si me da tiempo, a veces, como a las 8 o 9 de la noche, voy al gimnasio. Si me da tiempo, si no, no.
In terms of business, it's slowed down, she says, but COVID, it's only partly to blame.
No nos ha afectado tanto de la cuestión de que vengan a la tienda, pero la economía sí, porque la gente ya no tiene, pues no tiene dinero.
It's not a question of whether people are coming into the store. They are, she says. There's just less because they don't have the extra money to spend now.
Por ejemplo, para nosotros es más difícil. Un tiempo había más trabajo, ahora es menos trabajo.
Businesses in Pilsen, like Los Jasmines, faced hardship even before the pandemic began. Among other challenges, they've had to adjust to the many changes gentrification has brought to their once predominantly Latino neighborhood.
La gente, te voy a decir por qué, la gente que vivía en este barrio se movió, se cambió de este barrio porque han sido el incremento de rentas, de impuestos, y se fueron a barrios que son un poco más baratos.
The people who used to live in this neighborhood, Latinos, a lot of them moved, she said, because of an increase in housing prices, an increase in taxes. She said their store was originally geared toward them.
Estaba como para dirigida para el comercio latino, que les gusta salir, comprar pocas cosas. Entonces se cambian y para nosotros nos afecta.
Initially, during the pandemic, she says, business actually increased since some people in the area were avoiding shopping at large grocery stores.
Durante la pandemia, sí fue un poquito más ocupado porque la gente no iba a supermercados grandes para evitar enfermarse. Entonces, a nosotros un poquito nos ayudó, pero después, ya que se restablecieron supuestamente las cosas, sí afectó porque mucha gente se cambió.
But once everything started to open back up, business slowed again.
Entonces ya ahorita la mayoría de la gente que nosotros tenemos como clientes son americanos.
Wow.
Son americanos, and nosotros tenemos que cambiar nuestros productos porque ya la gente que viene es más americana.
Now, she says, the majority of their customers are americanos, Americans, as she described, and not Latino. So they've had to change their inventory to accommodate. Javier, the U.S. postal worker featured, is first-generation Mexican-American and grew up in Pilsen. He says neighborhood residents have been marginalized for decades.
But there's definitely an obvious change. The prices in property and rents has gone way up. And it's a ripple effect that's affected small businesses like hers and schools. Also churches, most of the parishioners have moved out of the neighborhood.
It was pouring rain outside on the day I met Javier in front of the mural, but he still agreed to show up, a metaphor for the stark reality of essential workers. Even with the cold weather and snow quickly approaching in Chicago and the pandemic still lingering, essential workers will have to face the elements and continue to show up because staying home is simply not an option for them.
A lot of essential workers that are depicted on the mural next to me may or may not have legal status here in this country. Many of them are making minimum wage, and they're just trying to support their families and get through the day with a handicap, you know, whether it be their status or whether it be their lack of pay. Some people were staying home making way more money on unemployment than these people that were grinding day in and day out. And I'm not the person that makes the rules or policy, but that to me doesn't seem fair.
Mateo Zapata and Pablo Serrano are the two artists of the mural. It took them 1 week working 10 to 12 hour days to paint by hand. I talked with Zapata in front of a new mural he's painting across the street from Los Jasmines. It was a windy day, and he too was battling the elements in order to keep making progress on his next creation. He was quite proud to note that he paints all of his murals by hand. He doesn't use spray cans. Zapata says he wants the essential workers mural to serve as a visual reminder for those who are
marginalized or live in communities that don't have resources and that aren't safe. Our community's workforce is essential, but the need for our safety and resources isn't.
Despite this, community members like Juan, the butcher shop worker depicted in the mural, says he's just grateful for the opportunity to live in this country because it's given him a means to an end when it comes to supporting his family back home in Guatemala. I spoke with him at his job on one of his breaks.
Yo soy de Guatemala y llegué aquí en este país para echarle ganas para salir adelante y no tengo muchas experiencias pues de estas cosas porque yo simplemente vengo de una aldea retirado de un pueblo donde estoy es un rancho chico y ahí no tengo mucha experiencia por eso, pero cuando llegué aquí.
Juan is 25. He left Guatemala as a teenager and followed his older brother to the United States to find work.
Empecé a trabajar y viendo las cosas como se debe ser y en las tiendas, todo. Y más estas como pasó ahorita, me incluyeron con ese mural. Y es una experiencia para mí.
He says he feels emotional to be included in the mural because it's the first time he's ever been a part of something like this. He says he thinks it's good for people to see.
Para que vean la gente que podemos hacer salir adelante todo. Y luchamos con toda la pandemia que pasó.
That with everything going on, we can still keep moving forward, work hard, and succeed.
Y no nos rendimos pues, sino seguimos trabajando nada más con las reglas que pusieron.
We've continued working, he says, adopting the new regulations in place
para salir adelante y para ayudar a nuestra familia y hacer nuestros sueños, lo que queremos y todo.
Despite his hours being cut at times during the pandemic, he typically works 6 days a week and clocks in a little more than 40 hours. Juan said he always tries to think positive and reminds himself to keep moving forward for himself and his family.
Pensar en lo positivo, porque pensar en lo negativo siempre se cae más bajo uno.
Thinking negatively, he says, only makes you go lower.
Pero siempre hay cosas que pasan que siempre difícil, así como les digo, como la situación de mi papá. Es una cosa que sentí yo muy difícil y más de la larga distancia.
There's always hard things that you have to face, he said, like the situation with my father. That was really hard for me. It was even harder than what I faced being so far away from them. Juan's parents are back in the small ranch town in Guatemala where he grew up. He said there are no lights or major highways there, and his father isn't able to work because he recently had to have his feet amputated. So Juan and his siblings send money back home to support their parents.
Pero siempre hemos echado más ganas. Yeah. Y en esas cosas como que nos queda la experiencia de cómo hacer las cosas en la vida. Pues.
You always have to keep pushing forward and trying your very best, he said, because it's in those experiences that you learn how to live life. His break now over, Juan went back to doing what he loves, preparing food for his community.
One of the really interesting things I find about the COVID pandemic is that the term essential worker wasn't really a thing last year. None of us had thought about workers as being essential or non-essential in quite that way before.
Austin Edwards is a senior policy analyst for the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning. A new CMAP study shows a disproportionately high number of essential worker jobs in the Chicago area are held by people of color and those who live in lower income neighborhoods. More than 54% of essential workers are people of color, compared with 44% of all workers in the region, the study found. But the numbers are likely higher, since retail and grocery store workers like Rosalinda and Juan were not originally considered essential.
Retail workers were not included as essential workers, but in the data that's available, that would also mean that grocery store workers were not considered essential. But anyone who was going to the grocery stores trying to buy rice or beans and flour back in March and April will remember that these workers were really the ones at the very edge of the front lines, making sure that we could get the things that we needed to continue on.
Food and beverage stores in the Chicago area employ about 83,000 people, with supermarkets making up the bulk of that workforce. Rosalinda and Juan represent the stories of these workers, who've often been overlooked in Chicago, yet whose spirit has always led them to keep going. It's that unrelenting spirit and the support of family that got Rosalinda through a bout with COVID.
Yo te voy a decir algo. Cuando la pandemia empezó, yo me infecté. Luego. Eso fue en abril.
She and her husband contracted the virus in April and had to stay home for over a month to recover.
No fue tan difícil para mí, en cuestión de enfermedad. Me sentí muy bien, me sentí bien. Sí tuve poco de gripa y tos muy poca, pero me sentí bien.
It wasn't that hard for me when it came to dealing with it physically, she said. I had cold-like symptoms, but I felt mostly fine.
Pero dejar de trabajar sí me costó. Me costó mucho trabajo porque...
But work-wise, she said, that did cost me.
Estamos en un área donde puedes contaminar o contagiar a las demás personas.
I'm around a lot of people at work, she says, so the risk of spreading it is greater for me.
Entonces, sí me tuve que quedar en mi casa por más de un mes. Más de un mes por seguridad mía y por seguridad de los demás. Más por los demás, ¿verdad?
So she stayed home for more than a month to ensure the safety of her and everyone around her, but more for the safety of others, she said. She was fortunate enough to have help from her older brother to cover her rent, since both her and her husband were out of work. But it was tough, she says. Their household didn't qualify to receive the federal stimulus payment or any government assistance because her husband is still in the process of becoming a U.S. resident.
Mi hermano de la tienda me ayuda. Entonces, él me ayudó, por ejemplo, el pago de un mes, él me ayudó a pagar la mitad de lo que tenía que hacer yo el pago y mi hermano me ayudó con lo demás.
She said she tried to apply for alternative assistance programs to see if they would help her, but they didn't. They told her it was all based on a lottery system.
Pero yo hice una solicitud a ver si me ayudaban y no me ayudaron.
Additionally, Rosalinda and her husband had to pay $100 each to get tested for COVID-19. She said at the time, there were no free testing sites in the neighborhood.
Tenemos una clínica comunitaria y la clínica te dice quédate en tu casa, no vengas. No hagas nada. Si tú saliste, lo único que te dicen ve a hacer una prueba del, pues si sales positivo, una prueba del COVID y ya. Si sales positiva, quédate en tu casa.
After they both tested positive, the local community clinic told her and her husband not to leave their house unless it was an absolute emergency.
No salgas, no vengas, no vayas a un hospital si no lo necesitas.
Don't come to the clinic, don't go to the hospital, don't go to the store, stay home, they told her. And fortunately, she and her husband both recovered and never had to go to the hospital. Meanwhile, neither Javier nor Juan have contracted COVID, nor their families, but they all remain fearful that they could.
A veces se siente como miedo por eso.
Juan is undocumented and doesn't have health insurance. At times, yes, he said, I do feel afraid because of that.
I'm concerned that I might catch the virus and be asymptomatic and bring something home to my wife or pass it along to my parents or my kids, only to find out when it's too late.
Rosalinda, on the other hand, says she's scared to catch it again. And that if she does, She fears she may not recover as easily as she did the first time.
Ahora sí me da un poco de miedo otra vez porque digo, si me vuelve a pasar, si ya no me va igual, o no sé, ¿verdad? No sé. Pero sí es sí es difícil.
She says she's concerned not necessarily with being in contact with people so much as handling money on a daily basis that so many others have come in contact with.
Nosotros estamos en contacto con dinero, no con las personas, con el dinero. Que cada que lo usamos, pues hay que lavarnos las manos, hay que usar, desinfectar el área y todo. Pero sí tenemos miedo.
Neither her nor her husband are sure of where they contracted the virus. And for so many essential workers, the risk of contracting it is just something they can't afford to avoid. Even as the pandemic puts more of a work demand on some than ever before.
I've been a carrier for 23 years, and I've never seen it as busy during the holidays, which is our peak season, than I've seen it during this pandemic.
Edwards from CMAP says the work that keeps our communities running comes in many shapes and shades. And while workforce data can give us a tally of people in different occupations, it can't tell us who matters or who should matter in the midst of a crisis.
None of us have thought about workers as being essential or non-essential in quite that way before. And now, I hope, there's a new appreciation, not just in government, not just in nonprofits, but really across society for the vital role that these people play in making sure that our communities continue to function. And what we owe them in terms of supporting opportunities for a healthy, successful, productive life. And I think that appreciation should really extend well beyond the immediate pandemic and should help to inform many of the policies and investments that we want to make going forward.
For Javier, Rosalinda, and Juan, life has had to go forward, even in the midst of crises. But for them, there's hope to be found in that. And hope, it seems, especially during these times, has become the most essential of all.
We're all spokes in a wheel. We all have a job to do. And unfortunately, we've been on the front lines. We're bringing people what things they ordered, we're their lifeline, we're their connection to the world.
No podemos rendirnos con eso, sino hacer más fuerte.
We can't get preoccupied with all of this, Juan said. We have to stay strong and stay positive in our minds, work hard, and keep moving forward. And that is something the artists who painted them never wanted anyone to forget.
I think that, you know, younger people growing up need to know that their community was made up of essential workers. You know, like, I think they need to be proud of who they are and proud of where they come from and proud of being a part of their community, right? That their neighborhood isn't made up of, you know, criminals and bad people that shouldn't be in this country, but that it's made up of essential workers.
In episode 4, journalist Sarah Lemanchek sheds light on the medical supply chain that takes us from Wuhan, China to Minneapolis, Minnesota.